Blood podcast, where we discuss everything about the HBO series True Blood from a sister's point of view. I'm Sister J.
And I'm Sister K. And welcome to episode 7. Let's get started.
Okay.
All right. We're back for another great week episode of True Blood.
It was exciting.
It was so great.
It was very good. Got some answers to some stuff.
So, why don't we go ahead and start right into our recap? Because we have a pretty full show today.
Yeah, that's really... Okay. Okay! We're going to recap in Dallas first. Okay, first we have Lorena, Eric, and Bill. You know, we start with Lorena meets Eric in the hotel lobby. And I like the way that she's just kind of walking slow and flowing. And we see that Eric is feeding on a woman, but he's bored because, you know, she really likes it. So he asks her to pretend that she hates being fed on. And so Eric senses Lorena, and he sends the woman off and tells her, you know, tell your manager you were excellent. And if he calls me, I'll confirm that for you. So Eric and Lorena have a talk. We find out that Lorena accepted Eric's invitation to Dallas. So he asked her to come see Bill. And we also find out that Lorena has not seen Bill for 70 years. So she's asking Eric, you know, why am I here? And Eric says that Bill has something that he wants and Bill's in the way. So Lorena asks, well, if the thing Eric wants is Bill's human, then Eric says, well, yeah, sort of. And Lorena asks him, well, what is she? And Eric says, Sookie is more than human. But what? I do not know. So then Lorena kind of focuses on the piano player that's in the hotel lobby. And she flashes back to Chicago, 1926. I love this scene. Bill is playing the piano and he's singing the song Hard Hearted Hannah, which incidentally is the title of this episode. Hard Hearted Hannah. And he's singing that song and he's singing it in a real plushy home to what appears to be a group of rich folks. Lorena is, talking with a French accent, and she propositions this couple to have group sex with her and Bill after, you know, all the other guests leave. So when Bill finishes the song, he walks very slowly toward Lorena and this couple. And he and Lorena, of course, giving each other the little signals. And so Bill greets the woman and kisses the woman's hand. And he says in this French accent that his name is Guillaume. I thought that was pretty cool. Okay, the next time we see them, Lorena is on the bed, on this big bed, holding the woman's arms down while Bill drags that man into the bedroom and the man's all bloody, where you can see that Bill's been feeding on him. And Bill is telling the man, oh, you have a lovely home. We're going to enjoy living in it. And the man's kind of horrified. So Lorena tells Bill that to sit the man in the chair because she's going to make him watch. So Bill gets on the bed with the woman because the woman tried to get away. And Lorena is holding the man's head, making him look at the woman while Bill feeds on her. So Bill like bites her on the neck in a real vicious manner. The man starts screaming and the man is screaming and screaming and screaming. Lorena snaps his neck. I mean, just cleanly, boom, snaps his neck. And then Bill throws the woman down on the bed and she's still alive, but she's bleeding out. So Bill and Lorena kiss and then they have sex on this bloody bed while that woman's bleeding to death. But first, Bill takes the necklace off the woman that Lorena had admired earlier that evening and gives it to Lorena. And Lorena says, I love you, Bill. Well, the next scene we have is Bill and Lorena in modern times. And Lorena is sitting in Bill's room. Bill is obviously asleep. But when Bill hears Sookie screaming, and I'll get to why Sookie's screaming in a minute, he awakens abruptly, of course, like he always does. But Lorena says from over in the corner, is there something wrong with your, is something happening to your human? And Bill kind of looks startled and she jumps on top of him. And Bill's trying to get her off. But she says to Bill, I made you. Your blood knows mine. and you will never physically overpower me. So Bill tries to get up, but his little arms are just kind of out, and Lorena is kissing him, and he don't look like he wants to be kissed. Okay. Also in Dallas, we have Suki and what's going to happen to her at the church. We open, though, with earlier that day, Bill and Suki are in bed, and they're kind of cuddling, and then there's a knock on the door. So Bill puts on his robe and goes to the door, and it's Isabel and her human lover, Hugo. Isabel offers Hugo to go with Suki to the Fellowship of the Sun Church. So therefore, you know, Reverend Newland will be more believing of Suki rather than just a single woman alone. Initially, Bill objects to this. He says, no, no way. But then Suki listens into Hugo's thoughts, and she hears that he really, really loves Isabel very much. And so when she tells Bill this, then Bill agrees, okay, yeah, that's probably a good idea. So the next scene, we see Hugo and Suki sitting in the hotel lobby, and they have a plate of food there, so they're probably, you know, eating some lunch or something. And Hugo gives Suki a ring to help with their cover story that they are a couple engaged to be married, and they're looking for a church to have their wedding. And Suki thinks that's a real good idea. So Hugo also suggests to Suki that she let him do all the talking because, you know, the people at the Fellowship Church, they wouldn't want a woman doing all the talking and making all the decisions, and it would be more believable. So Suki agrees, but you know how that goes. So then Suki decides to question Hugo about his relationship with Isabel because she's never met another human who has a relationship with a vampire like she has with Bill. And Hugo confides in her that he and Isabel fight all the time, and lately they've been fighting about him wanting her to turn him. And he says that Isabel won't even discuss it with him. And then Hugo says, you know, they are just such beautiful people. But in 50 years, you and I, we're going to be old and gray and in a walker, old. And they're going to still look like they look today. So how can they still love us then? Well, Suki looks kind of disturbed because it she has a look on her face like, well, I never even thought of that. So, you know, she doesn't really say too much. So then as they're getting ready to leave, Hugo apologizes to Suki for even mentioning that aging factor. And Suki says, that's okay. If I die today, who cares? I'll never have to feel old, unwanted, and unloved, which I thought was funny. Okay, the next time we see Suki and Hugo, they are arriving at the Fellowship of the Sun Church, and they're greeted outside in the driveway by Sarah Newland. So I knew something was fishy there. Suki introduces herself, and she says that her name is Holly Simpson, and she introduces Hugo as Rufus Dobson, her fiancé. And Suki's doing all this talking. Rufus is barely saying a word. And Sarah tells them that she's so glad that they came, and she's going to take them to see Reverend Newland himself and see if he's available. So we next see Suki and Hugo sitting in Reverend Newland's office where Steve Newland is talking to them about, you know, the church and vampires and stuff. And as Suki is talking to Steve Newland, she's also listening to his thoughts. And Steve's thoughts, he's saying, he's wondering how that platform is coming. And he says, I wonder how that platform is coming. And I can't wait to bring that vampire up from the basement and watch the sun do him 2,000 years of justice. So, and Suki hears this, so now she knows they have Godric. And then next, Steve Newland says, hey, well, let me take you on a tour of the church. So as Steve Newland is walking through the halls, taking Suki and Hugo on a tour of the church, he's on his cell phone, and he tells somebody on his cell phone, he says, yep, see you soon. So that's kind of ominous there, it seems to me. Steve stops in front of the sanctuary to show them the sanctuary of the church. When he opens it, there's all this really impressive golden light from the setting sun filtering in through the windows, and it's really very, very impressive and very pretty sanctuary. So that everybody's all impressed, and then he's asking Suki, hey, have you ever been to a lock-in? And then he explains to her that's where you bring your sleeping bags, you know, and you lock it in the church. And Suki's beginning to feel really uncomfortable because she's hearing Steve's thoughts and she's hearing Sarah Newland's thoughts. And while Steve is talking to Sookie about explaining what a lock-in is, and he's smiling and everything, but his thoughts say, of course she hasn't. She's no Christian. Sarah's thinking, don't bring the girl into it, Steve. Those vampires probably made her do it. Then Steve's thoughts are saying, they say she can hear me. I wonder if that fang-loving freakazoid can hear me right now. She sure don't look normal. So he is really doing a good job trying to mask his little thoughts, but, you know, he's smiling and stuff. So Steve Newland tells Sookie that she doesn't need to go home and get any sleeping bags when Sookie's trying to, you know, get Hugo to say, well, let's go get our sleeping bags. He says, oh, y'all don't need to go home and get any because we got some extras. And so then Gabe, his little henchman, comes walking up and he says, oh, let me introduce you to my aide, Gabe. He says he's going to be joining us for the rest of the tour. Sookie listens in to Gabe's thoughts, and Gabe says, ooh, nice, very nice. She's got the perfect amount of titty showing. I thought, man, so Sookie's getting really wary. So Steve Newland takes them on a tour of the rest of the church. After the tour, Steve says he wants to show them a very special part of the church, which is his father's tomb on the lower level. And, you know, Sookie's, well, oh, no, we don't need to do that. We just need to go on home and, you know, think about it and look at the dates and stuff. So when Sookie and Hugo try to leave, Gabe and Steve Newland grab them and force them down to the basement. And as Steve Newland is pulling on Sookie, he's calling her the C word. And that is the point that Bill opens up and wakes up abruptly that, you know, I already talked about. So Sarah, though, is pleading for Steve Newland not to do this. She's pleading, said, please don't do this and please don't do this. But he and Gabe are still dragging him down the steps. And Gabe has already dragged Hugo all the way down the steps. And Hugo is laying down at the bottom of the steps. So he must have knocked him out or something. Maybe he fell. And Sookie is still trying to hang on to the banister and Steve Newland's pulling her. So Sarah looks down and she says, I'm sorry. And she shuts the door. So that's all for them. Okay. Now we know also Jason is at the church. But earlier that day, we find Jason and Luke, they've been summoned by Sarah and Steve Newland to come outside at the back of the church. And Steve Newland wants Jason and Luke to build a platform with a cross on it for a ceremony called Meet the Sun. And when Jason says, what's that? Then Steve Newland says, Luke, why don't you tell him what it is? And Luke explains to Jason that the ceremony is where a vampire is chained to a cross just before the sunrise, and the whole congregation sits up in the bleachers and watches the vampire burst into flames when the sun comes up. So Jason seems a little disturbed by that. He's like, oh, okay, you know. The next scene we see is later in the day, and we see that half of the platform is already completed. So Jason and Luke are still working on it, and they're talking about Luke being abstinent for 3 years. And Jake's saying, Jason is saying, I don't know if I can do that. So Luke is telling Jason that adultery is one of the great sins on par with incest and bestiality. And Luke says, but even worse than that, there's nothing worse than having sex with a vampire or a dude or a vampire dude. And anything less than that, you can repent. Well, Jason seems to like the idea that, okay, he could repent, you know, for what he and Sarah have already done. So what is really interesting about this whole scene and the whole conversation is as Jason and Luke are talking, we see a car driving up the driveway in the background. We now know that's Hugo and Sookie. So, you know, she's right there, but of course she didn't see them and, you know, Jason didn't see her. So the next scene, it's nighttime and Jason has entered the church sanctuary looking for Steve or Sarah Newland to tell them that the platform is completed. It's all finished. But he hears Sarah crying up in the balcony. So Jason goes to her and she says that Steve is not the man she thought he was. And Sarah's telling Jason that Steve wants to use him and Luke and the other guys not to defend them from vampires, but to start a war. Well, Jason doesn't believe Sarah. Sarah then tells Jason that Steve is vicious and cruel, and he uses the C word. Jason takes out his little bandana and dries her eyes, and she is saying to Jason, God intends for me to be with you and not with Steve. Now, when Jason kind of protests and say, nah, you know, but you're married. Then Sarah says, but not in my heart. So eventually Jason and Sarah kiss and then they fall to the floor and have sex in the balcony of the church, which that's kind of bad. Also in Dallas, we have Jessica who is, we see her alone in her little portion of the room, which is adjoining Bill, of course. And the shutters are coming up because in the Vampire Hotel, as soon as it's nightfall, then the curtains come up and she awakens abruptly in her hotel room, excuse me, and she immediately checks her cell phone, you know, the one she took from Leon, the limo driver, to see if Hoyt has left her any messages. And, you know, she's very disappointed that there are no messages, so she throws the phone across the room. Then Jessica puts on her robe, and the way she puts on her robe, it's like fast and slow at the same time. It's a really cool scene, I thought. And then she goes to the bar, and she kind of glances at the bar menu, which is the, as we know, room service. So then she's thinking, so she takes two bottles of True Blood and pours them in the sink because she intends to call room service again, but she's going to make Bill think she's been drinking the True Blood, I'm sure. But then there's a knock on the door, and she finds out that it's Hoyt standing at the door. So she kind of fumbles with the door to get it open. And as soon as she opens the door, Hoyt is apologizing for not calling her, you know, trying to explain my mother cut off my cell phone and all this stuff. And Jessica is so sweet. She is just so happy. And she says, I'm so happy I could cry, but I don't want to because it's really gross when I do. Because as we all know, she cries blood. So Hoyt kisses Jessica as he enters the room and Jessica closes the door behind them. So that's a real sweet scene. Okay, now we're back in Bon Ton. And we're at Merlot's, and we're going to talk about Lafayette. Now, Lafayette didn't have much to do in this whole episode, but his scenes were very powerful. We're at Merlot's earlier in the day, and we see Arlene flirting with Terry. And she's saying that she has a surprise for him later on. And Terry says, I hate surprises, you know that. But he agrees to meet her after work. Then in Merlot's, Maxine, which is Hoyt's mother, and her friend Benita Morris, they're sitting in a booth having lunch. And Maxine is complaining to Daphne about the fact that, you know, they're still waiting on their iced tea. So after Daphne apologizes and, you know, goes off to get their iced tea, Maxine makes some kind of rude comment about, you know, well, you know, I guess it's a good thing she's not too good because all the good waitresses here get killed. And, you know, they kind of laugh, her and the woman laugh. Then Hoyt marches into Merlot's and slams his cell phone on the table. And he demands that his mother reactivate his phone because she's done cut off his phone. He says, how come this needs an activation fee? I just paid this last week. And she says, any girl who calls you late at night is after one thing, money. That's what she's thinking. And and Hoyt says, what do you mean money? We don't have any money. And that Benita, which you can tell is probably a busybody, she's looking like, And so Maxine's looking at Benita like, yes, we're very comfortable. But Maxine refuses and says that, you know, again, good girls should not be calling him at all hours of the night. So Hoyt issues a threat to his mama, and he says, you better turn this phone on. And then he starts to leave. But he turns around and comes back and says, you want to know why Jessica calls me late at night? That's because she's a vampire. And you got to see the look on his mama and her friend's face. And so Benita, the friend, she puts her hand on Maxine Hoyt's mama's hand as if to say, oh, there, you poor thing, you know. And then Hoyt stomps out of Merlot's. Okay, then we see Andy come into Merlot's and he's asking Sam, where's Lafayette? And of course, you know, he directs him back to the kitchen. So Andy goes into the kitchen and he begins questioning Lafayette, saying he's wondered where Lafayette's been for the last 2.5 weeks. And now that he's back, he seems to have lost a lot of his pizzazz. And so Lafayette doesn't say anything initially, but, you know, as Andy keeps pressing him, Lafayette says he was on a cruise.
A gay cruise.
Wait a minute. Andy, he says he was on a cruise, and Andy says, what kind of cruise? And then Lafayette says, a gay cruise. And Andy seems like he's got this look on his face like, ooh, you know. But anyway, and so then Andy Andy accuses Lafayette of murdering Miss Jeanette. And he's saying, you know, it's kind of fishy that a woman who just so happens to have ripped off your cousin and your auntie, meaning Tara and Letty Mae, is found dead. And Andy gets louder and louder and louder with his accusations. And then Lafayette has hallucinations.
Flashes.
Well, yeah, but he's hallucinating that Eric is Andy. So is this person is dressed in Andy's clothes, but it's Eric's face. And he falls into the corner, and he's cowering into the corner. Well, Terry, in the meantime, has come into the kitchen to put something away. And he looks at Andy, and when Lafayette, you know, falls down terrified, because he's, you know, hallucinating that it's Eric, then Terry pushes Andy and says, Andy, what are you doing? When we used to play as children and stuff, you was always the sheriff with integrity. And Terry accuses Andy of being mean and tells him, you better get out of here. So right before he leaves, though, Andy does apologize to Lafayette, and then he leaves. And Lafayette's like hyperventilating, you know, on the floor. And Terry kneels down on the floor. Oh, crazy Terry. Kneels down on the floor by Lafayette. And he takes Lafayette's hand and pulls Lafayette close to him. And he hugs him. And he's saying to Lafayette, okay, close your eyes. And he makes Lafayette close his eyes. And he says, now imagine a golden glowing ball radiating warmth and safety. That was so touching. It was a great scene. The next time we see Lafayette, it's later in the evening. And Lafayette has recovered, we see. And he is in the freezer, putting some items in the freezer or getting some items from the freezer. And all of a sudden, Pam appears behind him and says, good evening, Lafayette, or something like that. And Lafayette, of course, freaks out. And he's, you know, why don't y'all leave me alone? He says, I haven't done anything. I haven't told anyone. And Pam kind of says, well, we kind of knew that. We knew you weren't going to tell. And so Pam says, well, you know, I have a request from Eric. And Lafayette says, well, why didn't y'all just glamour me? And she says, oh, poor thing. We would have, but then you wouldn't remember that you owe us. And he says, what do you mean owe you? So Pam tells Lafayette that Eric says he's back in business selling V. And she gives him a bottle of V and tells him, get to work. Thought that was pretty cool. Okay. Now, let's recap Tara, Eggs, and Marianne. Oh my goodness, this was an excellent episode for these three individuals. We see Tara and Eggs and Marianne and Carl. They're all at Sookie's house, and Tara's on the phone talking to somebody or holding on the phone because the water heater has broken and she's trying to find a part for it. Marianne is at the kitchen table. She's extremely irritable because she can't take a hot shower. The coffee's hot. The showers are cold. She's real irritable. And Eggs has a wrench in his hand, and he's trying to fix the water heater. So when Marianne complains that the coffee is as cold and unappealing as that cold shower, then Tara says, well, what can I say? And Tara was her same little sassy self. She says, you know, what can I say? I wish I had a fancier crib for you to squat in, but I don't. Marianne gives her a look, and she says, Tara, real sarcastic. Tara, you may not know this about me, but without a hot shower in the morning, I have no tolerance for sarcasm. And Tara looks kind of worried, and she says, and then the person she's holding on the phone for comes back on the phone, and she finds out that they have the part that they need in Faraday. Well, Marianne protests, says Faraday is 2 hours away. You know, I need some stuff before then. So Tara asks, well, Eggs should come with me because I can't drive your car and read the map at the same time. And Eggs is in the background kind of giving her the highlight like, yeah, yeah, take me, you know, because he wants to get out of there because he can't fix a water heater. So Marianne agrees and tosses her the keys and say, you know, drive like the wind. The next scene we see Tara and Eggs driving down the road and they are laughing and talking and making fun of Marianne being so bitchy about, you know, having no hot water and stuff. And Eggs is reading her the map and telling her, you know, where to turn and stuff. All of a sudden, Eggs starts looking worried and looking around at the scenery like he's looking for something. And he says to Tara, there's going to be a diner right up around that bend made from an old red barn. And then he tells her, turn to the right. And as soon as she does, there's a old diner that looks like it's closed, but it's made out of converted old red barn. So Tara says, what the crap? So Eggs gets out of the car and he starts walking down this road that's adjacent to this old abandoned diner. And Tara's, where are you going? Well, they walk for about 45 minutes, we find out. And Tara's complaining all the way. And then they come up on this scene. It looks like maybe a former campsite or something, because there's a little round circle and it looks like there's been a fire or something in there. But there's bloody clothing strewn all around. And they're looking at these bloody clothing and thinking, what? What happened here? Then they see a large rock that has symbols written on it. And then Eggs finally sees this even larger rock that has blood stains on it. And so they're getting kind of freaked out. Then Eggs says, as he's looking at this bloodstained rock, he says, I've been to this place before. He says, I can't remember when, but I know I've been here before. And he starts to cry. So, you know, Tara helps him up and says, you know, let's get you home. So they go home. And next scene we see, it's already nighttime. By the time they get back, Tara and Eggs see clothing laying around on the ground. And when they go in the house, it looks like a pigsty. There's clothing all over the place. There's food all over the place. There's chairs overturned and stuff. And she says, ooh, these people are pigs. To me, that's a little foreshadowing. But anyway, so they follow this trail of clothing out the back door and through the yard. And as they're talking and walking towards where they hear these drums playing, Eggs hear somebody screaming or moaning, can't tell which. And then they see a various groups of naked people having sex on the grass while Marianne is in the center vibrating. There's loud drum music. Everybody's got the black eyes. Eggs and Tara look real scared. Marianne looks at them. She stops vibrating. She looks at them and kind of smiles. And then she goes way into her little vibrating dance, you know? And it's kind of freaky. And the next time we see Tara and Eggs, they have joined the group and they're having sex on the ground and they both have the black eyes too. So then that leaves us Sam and Daphne. This is the best part of the episode. Sam and Daphne earlier that morning are laying naked on the pool table after they've had sex that night before and they're talking. Sam asked Daphne about those scratches on her back, which I was so glad he did because I wanted to know. Daphne says that she doesn't really know. She was running in the woods, so that lets us know that she was probably in her animal form. She said she was running in the woods and something scratched her. She didn't know what, but she was sick for weeks and the doctors didn't know why she was sick or what scratched her. But, you know, she finally made it. So then Daphne asked Sam who else knows that he's a shapeshifter. And Sam says, only Sookie knows. And Daphne says, hmm. So later that day, while Daphne is waiting on, you know, customers in the diner and stuff, then, you know, Sam comes and tells her that he can't concentrate on anything because every time he, you know, goes by the pool table, he thinks about her. And so he says to her, well, why don't we, you know, go out back and take a run and just, you know, run in the sunshine. And she says, oh, if I do that, my boss will kill me. And he says, if you don't, your boss is going to fire you. So they laugh and they go out the back and we're assuming they go into their animal forms. Now, the next scene is at nighttime and we see Sam and Daphne are in the form of a pig and a dog. And they stop in the middle of a road as Andy Belfour is driving his Mercedes down the road while he's drinking a bottle of whiskey. And Andy stops his car in the middle of the road and he's calling out, hey, there's that pig. Here, pig. Come here, pig. But Andy has his gun out. He's got his gun cocked and ready. I guess he's going to shoot the pig. And Andy's running through the woods and, of course, he falls down. Then he's cussing. So next we see Sam and Daphne have changed back into their human form and they're laughing like, ooh, that was, you know, that was close. Well, Sam's asking, how come, Daphne, you didn't change into a dove? you know, like she did before. And Daphne's saying, oh, the pig is her go-to shift. I thought, So Sam says that it seems that Andy recognized her. And he starts asking her more questions. But Daphne distracts him by, you know, performing oral sex on him out there in the woods. So he wouldn't ask her no more questions. So next we see, probably about, you know, 30 minutes later, however long, Daphne is leading Sam through the woods. And she's kind of laughing, saying, come on, I got a surprise. And Sam's kind of, oh, okay, well, you know, he don't really like surprises. Then he hears the drum music. And he hesitates. And he says, she says, well, what's wrong? And he said, you know, drums really don't portend anything too good except maybe cults and hippies. And Daphne says, not this time, Sam. And her whole demeanor has changed. She's like, you know, she's like totally changed. She's not laughing, smiling, nothing. Not this time, Sam. Two people with the black eyes, a woman and a man, jump out the woods and grab Sam. They grab his arms and he's saying, what, what? And they're leading him toward the sound of the drums. And Daphne is saying, sorry, Sam. Well, when Sam gets to the clearing, he sees all those groups of people having sex on the ground. Of course, he recognizes Arlene and Terry, Tara and Eggs. He sees the coroner and that one old lady at the bar, you know, and everybody's doing this. And Marianne is standing in the center. And Sam is saying, what the F is this? I'm not going to say the word, but, you know. And Daphne says, it's the end of the road. Then she walks to this table that's behind Marianne. And she grabs this bull mask, which is a headgear, off of this makeshift table that they've made on the rocks. And Carl is standing nearby, and he's holding this big tray draped in red velvet. It looks like red velvet, with a ritualized knife on it. And Daphne puts the bull mask on Marianne's head, and Marianne starts chanting and stuff. And then Sam is screaming, no! As he's being held by the man and the woman, and the episode ends for the day. Ooh, that was a good episode.
That was good.
I love that episode. So that ends the recap. That's what happened.
Yes, this was a great episode. Really good episode. What did you think about finishing up on that storyline with Marianne, Eggs, and Sam?
Sam?
I mean, you know, that to me,
she's going to do something to him. She's going to either take some of his blood. She's not going to kill him, I don't think, because I don't think she wants to kill him. But she's going to either take his blood or scratch him and so he can be under her control like Daphne is or something. I was so disappointed in Daphne, though, but you said that earlier.
Yeah, I thought that once we saw her scratches and she wasn't dead, I thought she would be under the influence.
Yeah, you were right.
I didn't know what was going to happen until we saw the dog and the pig running across the street. Uh-huh. And Annie got out of the car, and I was like, that's that damn Daphne.
That's Daphne. What's the damn pig?
And Sam said, why do you turn into a pig? I was like, shit, Sam, run.
I know it.
Because
I was saying that too.
I knew then. I was right. Marianne's got her under her control.
Yep. Because
when
Tara
has lured Sam somewhere.
Yeah, because as soon, remember when the first time Tara saw Marianne, Marianne was with the pig.
Right.
See?
Well, yeah, the pig is somewhere around it all.
And that's been the pig the whole time that Andy saw at the party. And then he didn't see her because she changed in human form again.
Right.
See?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I was so shocked, though, that Daphne was the pig. I just knew it was Carl, you know?
And that, well, going back to the very first part of the episode with Sam and Daphne laying on that pool table butt naked.
Yep.
First of all, I was like, that's some nasty shit.
That's nasty. Because you know he didn't clean that pool table.
No, and then later in the day he kept saying, every time I pass the pool table, I think about last night.
I know it.
And I'm like, you nasty mother.
Because people was playing pool on that table.
Yeah.
Later on in the day, when we get the scene with Hoyt and his mama, some people was playing pool on that table.
So
you know they didn't clean it.
That's what I thought of, first of all. When they were talking about, or she was asking him if he has told anyone about what he is. And all I could think about was his butt-naked self is laying full frontal on that daggone table.
Well, You know, as soon as she asked Sam, who else knows that you shapeshift?
Right.
I knew then that she was being controlled.
That was kind of weird.
Yeah, because why would she need to know who else knew? That's for Marianne's benefit. Right. See? Ooh, yeah. Man. I thought, oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
So I feel I'm really worried about Sam, though, and what's going to happen. And I'm worried about Tara and not really eggs, but I'm worried about Tara.
Yeah.
Because now we see, this is the first time we see she's under that same black eye influence.
She has the black eyes.
Whatever the hell that is.
Yeah. So, and you know what? I'm just now thinking, too, because of the way Arlene acts towards Terry since the first time they was under that black eye influence, they must have memory of what happens. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
or some kind of memory of what happens.
At Tara's party, they weren't under the influence.
Yes, they were.
Terry and Arlene?
Yes, they were. They were part of that group.
I know, but later on in the woods, they weren't part of the influence. They went off on their own. That's while they weren't under the influence of whatever was at the party.
That's true.
And they went on their own and was doing whatever. So that's what I think they remember. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
I mean, we've never really... Mm-hmm. gotten any confirmation that the people are aware of anything after they are under her influence.
Well, now, let me ask you about Jessica and Hoyt. That was one of my favorite scenes is the scenes about Jessica and Hoyt.
Which there was only one.
You know what, though? She is, I just have to say, this actress playing Jessica, she is one of the prettiest redheaded girls I have seen. Because a lot of times, sometimes when you got real red hair, you know, they're a little too pale or whatever. But she is just cute. She is really cute.
She is cute.
The actress playing this part. And I just love it when she's on the screen, though. She and Hoyt are just wonderful together, I think.
Yeah, they are.
So, do you think she's going to bite him?
I really don't think so.
I don't know. I can't tell because because she can't always control it.
Well, the girl who plays Jessica, her name is Deborah Ann Wall. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's just a side note.
Yeah. I really like her. I really like her a lot.
Excuse me. I'm still coughing now. I'm sorry. I don't think she's going to bite him. I think she likes him. Mm-hmm. If she was going to bite him, she would have bit him the first day.
Well, but I think she might bite him like Sookie bites, like Bill bites Sookie.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to go through all that yet. They're okay. Still new.
Maybe not.
I think what she wants, because she is young, she's never dated anybody or kissed a boy, is what she's saying. And I think they like each other, and I don't think they're going to go, I don't think she's going to do that. I think she's going to be too scared to do
that could be.
She wants to be with him. She wants to kiss him. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so cute.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really...
I think we're going to see Hoyt moving out from his mama, though.
Well, yeah.
I think that's the threat that he meant, you know, because that's wrong, though.
His mama out the house and telling her what he going to do.
Well, I don't think he'll do that because he's too nice.
I don't know. He's pretty mad about his phone being turned off.
That is true, but I don't think he'll do that, though.
No, yeah, it's probably time for him to move out.
I think so.
So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I just really, really like that storyline.
Let me tell you something else I really, really like. And I feel kind of guilty for liking it, though, but I really like the flashback scene with Bill and Lorena. Man, because that showed how he fed and just used people, which is what he told Sookie.
Right.
But it just showed it, though, for you. And he was one ruthless person or vampire.
She taught him to be ruthless.
She taught him well, though.
Not well. She was ruthless when she changed him. And when Bill changed Jessica, he did it, I think, if we can say gently.
Yeah.
You know, when he did that, because he never turned anyone.
Right.
And he knew, like he said, I know the pain that it causes and everything that you go through. She didn't do that. She just got him.
She didn't care.
Right. And so all those years they were together, it's apparent now that that's what they did. They were just savagely killing people for their own enjoyment.
Yep.
Which is exactly what they did to that married couple.
Yep.
Which was awful.
Yep. It was.
But I kept wondering what they were doing and why they had accents and I guess it was just trying to blend in and
well, they were you could tell that they were trying to blend into the upper society. See,
well, probably they have different personas so that they don't get found out.
Absolutely,
throughout the years.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also learned too that obviously they hook up with some couple like this, and then they live in their house for a period of time, because Bill said to the man, "Oh, you have a lovely home. We're going to enjoy living in it." So after they killed that couple, they was going to be there for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but I just really, really liked seeing that part of his past, because, you know, Bill is such a gentleman, and, you know, sometimes you forget until he says, "I am vampire," that he's a vampire. Because he's such a gentleman and he's nice and stuff, but they're letting you see his background, and I liked it. I like that a lot.
Well, I don't like Lorena, and I don't, and I find it that, you know,
I'm kind of iffy on her.
Eric was ruthless because he knew exactly that if he brought Lorena in, it would occupy Bill so he could try to get Sookie to himself.
Exactly.
I think that's kind of jacked up, but you know, hey, you do what you gotta do.
Well, but like you said, Bill's in the way.
Exactly.
Bill's in the way. So you
but
know.
This is also causing Bill to not be able to go and help save her.
That's true.
You know, he'd have to wait till nighttime, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we already know he doesn't getting burnt.
Right, but we already know it is nighttime when they're snatching him in the basement.
Well, it's starting to get dark.
Right, it's starting to get dark, so
but, so I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, the way they left that scene, he's trying to rise up, just like he did, as you pointed out, when even though it was going to kill him, he went out in that sunlight trying to save Sookie. So, because
he's trying to get her off of him, but he can't, like she said, you cannot put a hand against me.
Yeah. So I don't know
how the heck he gonna get through this.
Yeah, we gonna see.
I really don't.
And at first I thought, well, maybe Jessica will go in his room.
That's what I thought she was gonna do.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm thinking. Maybe Jessica will go in his room to let him know, okay, you know, Hoyt is here and we want to come.
Oh, no.
Well, I don't know. Well, but anyway. This is what I thought. Maybe Jessica will go in his room and, you know, say something about, you know, Hoyt or, you know, Hoyt's Hill, and he wants to ask her permission or some bullshit like
she
that.
She won't do that.
And Lorena is distracted long enough because she'll want, well, who is this, you know?
No, I thought, well, as soon as Jessica threw her phone across the room and got her robe on, that she was going to go into Bill's room and that she would kind of help Bill get away from Lorena.
Yeah, I didn't
but
think that.
That didn't happen.
No.
I knew for a fact Jessica's not going to ask Bill for shit. Yeah, she's mad at him. Good. She doesn't want to, she's not going to ask him for permission or anything to do with Hoyt because he already done threw Hoyt out of the house.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Well, I don't know how Bill's going to get away from Lorena, but I kind of like Lorena though. I mean, she's pretty, but I want to know who is telling those Fellowship of the Sun people all about Sookie.
Somebody did. Uh-huh. Yes. Now, the scene that I did really like with Sookie, there's a couple this week, but I really liked the scene with Hugo and Sookie when they were, before they went to the Fellowship of the Sun Church.
I like that scene, too.
And they were eating, and she's like, you know, I've never met anyone who dated a vampire before. What, you know, what is it like? Do you guys fight? Do y'all, you know,
yeah.
What? I really like that. And that he could kind of get, he's like, yeah, we fight, and you know, but we get over it, and I'm glad that I even want to fight with her because that shows I love her.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really good scene.
That was very good. And I thought it was also really good how right before they was going to leave, because Sookie was actually disturbed. You could see it on her face when he talked about the aging and, you know, 50 years from now and stuff, because she had not thought about that.
No, I think she was more disturbed about him saying he wants to be turned into a vampire.
I think it was the aging thing, because she says, you know, after he apologizes about, you know, I shouldn't have said anything about, you know, when we're getting old, she says, well, you know, that way if I die today, I don't have to worry about ever being old. She was just saying that
because, you know, when she gets nervous or upset about stuff, she always kind of runs her
mouth. And that girl can talk, too. She was talking.
Well, that's something in the books, but they haven't really, explained it a lot in the TV show, that she's right. When she gets nervous, like that first scene when she first meets Bill, she's just talking and she's smiling and she's so bubbly. Mm-hmm. But she does that when she's nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, that they kind of explain it in this episode where she actually says,
right,
well, when I get nervous, I start to talk a lot and I smile a lot.
I thought the way this was filmed, it was excellent how they show the interaction between Sookie and the Newlands and what they were really thinking. Although they were saying all this stuff about the church lock-in and stuff, but they were thinking all this stuff. Oh, that was good.
No, that's what I was going to say. I don't think Steve knew about her the very first, when they first were in his office.
I don't think so.
He didn't know anything about her because he was thinking about the platform and doing whatever he was going to do to whoever he has in the basement, which is
awesome. And I don't think he's convinced because he says, after she's already heard all this other stuff, they say she can hear what I'm thinking. I wonder if that's true.
But
well, she don't even look normal.
I know, but what I'm trying to say is I don't think that he knew about her being the person with that they were trying to kidnap in the church office. I think he found out once they started walking towards the sanctuary and were in the sanctuary. I think that's the phone call he got.
The phone call. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when his true thoughts started coming out.
Yeah. I think you're right. I
don't think she knows anything. I don't think she knows that he tried to kidnap anybody, but she knows there's some shit down in the basement.
I think she does because when he is saying the things like she's no Christian, you know, and I wonder if she can really, really hear me and that kind of stuff. Sarah is thinking, Steve, why bring the girl into it? Those vampires probably made her do
that. That was when he was talking about, have you been to a lock-in?
Yeah, that's true.
And she knows what the lock-in means because they got somebody down in the basement.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what Sarah, I don't think Sarah knew.
Well, she says the vampires probably made her do this. That's what she said. That's what her thoughts were.
Oh. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe she does know more than that.
She knew that because, now, whether she knew about them trying to snatch the person at the airport, I don't know. But she knew that she knew as much about Sookie being the person that the vampires are trying to use to find Godric as Steve Newland, because that's what she said.
Well, I'm thinking that was after Steve starts saying that she's a fang banger and other stuff. But maybe I'm wrong because I honestly didn't get to watch it a second time like I normally do.
This is while they are standing there at the staircase talking about the lock in, and Steve is saying, "Of course, she don't know what a lock in is because she's no Christian." And Sarah, her thoughts that Sookie hears is says, "Don't bring the girl into this. Those vampires probably made her do it."
Okay,
that's what she's thinking.
I'll take your word for
it. And then Steve says, they say she can hear me. I wonder if that fang-loving freakazoid can hear me right now. That's what he said.
Well, that was a scene that I was like holding my breath on because even though I've read all the books, it's been a while since I've read them, so I can't really remember everything. This storyline is in the book, and I can't remember how they, you know, what happens. Clearly. So I was like, what the hell is she going to do? And she's trying to, you know, let's go home and get our stuff and nudging Hugo, but he's not really catching on.
Okay, well,
too quick. But then they couldn't have run anyway.
True.
Because that big old Wade.
Gabe
dude was standing in the way. So there was no way they would have been able to get out. Well, whatever Sarah knows or doesn't know, she does seem to, like, she regrets what's happening to them, but she's not going to stop it.
No.
Because, the bottom line is she still is part of it, and they have more knowledge of it than she does, so she's not going to stop it. She's just going to go off and feel sorry for herself, I guess.
I guess so.
So that was kind of annoying because you know, if you really felt really sorry about it, you would go call the cops, do something.
Well, no, she's not going to do that because she honestly wants to be a part of any revenge against the vampires because of, you know,
I don't really how she feels. That she really wants to.
I think she does.
No, I think she just wants to be now, you know, and then that scene with where she's up in the church crying and Jason comes in and he's asking her what's going on. And she tells him, and the way that she was telling him, you guys are going to be used for war, it just sounded like she didn't really want that to happen. And then when she was saying, you know, all my life I knew I was supposed to be with a great man, but now I realize that great man is you. She just wanted to be with somebody who was up and coming and rising up. That's what I feel like.
That's true.
I don't think she really cares who it is. If he's the Fellowship of the Sun preacher, if he's a president, if he's a senator. Because remember in another episode, when he asked her about that TV program when he was debating with Nan, the vampire. And he asked her, how did I do? And she's like, well, you sound kind of like a televangelist. And he says, well, but I am. Or a preacher. And he says, I am. She's like, yeah, but you could be senator someday.
That's true. She did.
So I think she is.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
I don't think she really cares too much. Well, you know, I think she cares about the vampires and vampire rights, and she's against it. But I don't think she really wants to get her hands dirty like Steve does.
Yeah. Yeah. And wait a minute. And speaking of Steve, see, I have said this before. Didn't you find it strange when he was talking to Sookie and Hugo in the office when they first met him and she was talking about her former preacher and he says, was he homosexual? You know, I'm thinking, see, this man's got an issue. I think he's a closet person myself.
Well, he could be. I didn't see anything about that.
Yeah. It seems to me, and that is right before Suki says, no. Well, he could have been that too, but he was and then she hesitated, a sympathizer.
Yeah.
But that's the first thing he jumped at. Was he oh, he was homosexual. And I'm thinking, you know,
hey, now back to the...
I think he's a homosexual.
Well, back to the Fellowship of the Sun. Church and Jason and Luke, when they went to build that platform and then Luke tells them what the Meet the Sun ceremony is, I'm thinking, well, whoever they got in the basement... Or Godric, who we assume that they have, is probably going to be the one that they meet the sun with.
Of course, yes. Because we find out later.
But I don't think.
It's Godric. Because he is thinking, when he's thinking.
Well, he doesn't say his name, but he says.
But he says 2,000 year old.
Yeah. And then, you know, Jason's kind of like, okay, all right. But he's so preoccupied with what he did with Sarah, I don't think he's really thinking about what was really going to happen.
He's not.
Because I don't think Jason, even though he's kind of been brainwashed into believing what they believe, I don't think he really wants to kill vampires.
And he's going to flash back to Eddie, you watch. I bet he's going to flash up. And then, this is another thing, too, that I thought of. I thought about that, too, about Jason, but I thought of, wait till he sees, because Godric, if you recall, looks like a little boy.
Yeah.
Jason's not going to like that.
He looks young.
But he looks like a child.
Well, he's not going to like the fact that they got Sookie down in the basement.
Oh, right, right.
If he even is allowed to find out.
Right.
I don't know. I'm sure if Steve Newland found out that she was there, he knows her last name. And he's going to put two and two together. So he might even think that Jason is infiltrating. I don't know. So I'm starting to get worried about Jason because, first of all, Jason's sleeping with his wife.
That's
true. I don't think... now that, you know, we talk about it, I don't know if Steve Newland's really going to care.
I don't think he's going to care.
Mm-mm. But also...
That's a good point.
I'm worried about
Jason. He may know Sookie's real name.
If he knows that Sookie can read minds and that she's with the Compton Party and she's from Bon Temps, which is where the Compton Party was flying in from, he's got to know that there's a connection with Jason.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that maybe they've got Jason up there thinking that, you know, close to that platform ceremony because they want to snatch him and throw him down there too because he's going to think he's infiltrating. I don't know. That was just a thought I had.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
But
I hope it doesn't go like that. But that's a good one though because, yeah.
If he was her last name.
There's not any indication that I can recall, not yet anyway, that I can recall that Steve Newland knows Sookie's real name.
Right, that's true.
And I don't even believe that Steve Newland knew it would be a woman, because Leon didn't know it would be a woman.
Well, he knew when he got the phone call. Because he said...
That's true, because somebody...
She supposedly can read my mind, and she's a thang banger.
Yeah, that's true.
So he knows now.
I wonder if they told him her name.
Now, who do you think? It's Isabel or... what's the other dude's name? The other vampire in Godric's clan.
What was that Texan guy's name? I can't remember.
It's something common. I can't remember now.
I can't remember, but... I think it's Isabel. I think they want you to think it's the Texan guy because he's for having open out war with the humans, and right. She's not. And this
Stan.
Yeah. This is what I'm thinking, and this is the reason why. This is the reason why I think when Hugo was having the conversation with Sookie about every time I try to talk to her about turning me, she won't even discuss it. You know, she gets mad. She won't even discuss it. And even though she really loves him, but, you know, she's old, too. She ain't as old as Eric, but she's old, too. Uh-huh. And she knows there's going to be another human come along at some point. And I think she would freely sacrifice him.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first thing I thought when he said, and we argue about that all the time.
I can't remember from the books. Either.
All the time. And I got to thinking, because even though Stan knew about Sookie's plan, but Stan didn't know that she was going as a couple
right
that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Didn't.
Uh-uh. Isabel did, though.
Isabel, you.
I think it's Isabel.
That's wrong.
And I think she was
perfect. If you want to break up with the dude, just break up with the dude.
I think she's perfectly willing to sacrifice this human that she dearly loves, you know, in order to, whatever her motivation is, I don't know. And her motivation could be as simple as greed, because Godric is very powerful, and maybe she wants to be.
Yeah, maybe she wants to take over there.
Right, but Eric, maybe she wants to be sheriff. But see, Eric is older than Isabel. Eric is going to be hot if he ever finds out. So Isabel could be in trouble.
Yeah,
because Eric is real obsessive with Godric anyway, so you know that's his maker. So anyway,
now one other thing before we move on, excuse me, we didn't talk about Tara and Eggs when they were in the they pulled over to the side of the road, and Eggs went into the woods and they saw that clearing of clothes and blood stained rocks. And do you think that would have been another ceremony place? Why would Eggs not know? Do you think now they've never shown scratches on his back.
Well, I think what's getting ready to happen to Sam happened to Eggs. And that's what the blood stains on that rock is. It's whatever ritual she's getting ready to do.
So that's ritual what I kind think. Of puts them in their influence?
I guess so.
Huh.
But as soon as I saw them, where those two people snatched Sam and took him, and I saw the ritual, a dagger, and you know the first thing I thought was, ooh, because everything's on a big old rock outside,
right?
And I thought, ooh,
that looks like the other rock.
That looks like the other rock, because that was clearly there was one rock with clearly symbols written on it, painted on it, and another. Even larger rock, clearly there were blood stains on it. So I think whatever is getting ready to happen to Sam, it already happened to Eggs.
Eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hurt Sam.
And I know. I like Sam. I don't want him hurt.
This is the thing I want
to
know.
I'm so mad at Daphne.
Now, this is the thing they need to explain is Sam is a shifter.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a supernatural being, and he's supposed to have heightened senses.
Yeah.
How come he ain't sensing shit?
Yeah,
he didn't sense Marianne. Well, he knows Marianne, but he didn't sense, excuse me, he senses vampires, we know. He didn't sense nothing about Daphne being a shifter.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't sense what do you call it? He didn't. What the hell am I saying?
I don't know.
He didn't find out anything about Daphne scratches, being under the influence, being a shifter or anything on his own. Mm-hmm. He senses vampires, but he couldn't sense another shifter.
You got me. I don't know.
I don't get that.
I don't know.
I really don't get that.
Because I didn't know that he was supposed to have heightened senses. He's just a shapeshifter.
Well, animals have heightened senses.
Well, I wouldn't say heightened. They just have maybe better smell.
They have better senses.
Or better.
And they, you know, dogs can sense shit before humans can sense shit.
But they can't see nothing.
Well.
You know?
I just don't understand why he didn't know she was a shifter also. And
it does seem a little strange.
You know, doesn't that seem strange?
Because vampires certainly...
Now, I can understand why he said he's never met one, because he's been on the run since he knew he could do it.
That's true.
And so he hasn't ever stayed anywhere long enough.
But I don't know.
Why he couldn't tell...
I don't know.
That's odd. So I hope they kind of address that, because to me that's just not...
I want to address what the hell is the black eyes. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's freaky.
Yeah. I want to know what the black eyes are and why. Oh, black. You know, that's some freaky stuff.
Well, I want to know what the F Mary Ann is doing.
I know it. I'm getting tired of this stuff. You know, just outright tell us what she is.
They're not going to outright tell us.
And one thing we do know, though, we do know that when she changes into that little creature, her head don't change. That's a mask.
Yeah.
So only her body, lower limbs and arms and stuff change, but her head doesn't.
Well, it could be that she really does change, but she's trying to do a ceremony. She can't have no big ass claws and use a knife.
That's true.
I mean,
yeah, that is true.
Why do you need a big old knife like that when you got big ass, three big ass fingernails that could scratch big ass scratches down somebody's back?
That is true. So yeah, this is a ritual. This isn't her changing
so
to her thing.
I think she can still change into a bull.
Yeah.
But this is a ritual ceremony, so she's not going to be changing.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, this was an exciting episode.
And what
I
don't get is why does she just want to, why hasn't she scratched up Tara?
She's got something planned for Tara, though.
See?
And we don't know what it is.
Mating with eggs.
Yeah. It could be as simple as that.
Or make her like Carl and eggs part of her entourage or something. I don't know.
Who knows? But anyway.
I do want to find out what eggs and Carl are to her, because...
Yeah.
I don't know. Now that we know that eggs is kind of like, I have been here, but I have no idea where, why I know this place.
Mm-hmm.
It's... You know, he remembers being in an orphanage, but he didn't remember that place.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange.
So maybe he wasn't even in an orphanage. Maybe that was planted in his mind.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing I want to talk about was Lafayette.
Okay.
And him and Andy Belfleur attacking him in the kitchen.
That was a good scene.
That was a very good scene. And I felt so sorry for Lafayette.
I felt so bad.
When he started melting down to the floor and flashing to Eric and everything, I was like, oh, poor thing. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with Andy? Andy goes somewhere.
Andy is out of control,
And I
though.
loved the fact that Terry came in there and was like, Andy, what the hell are you doing?
I know it.
You need to get the hell out of here. You're not even a damn cop anymore.
Because Terry's shell-shocked. We know that.
Yeah.
And
but Terry took control.
He took control.
He knew exactly what to do.
And said.
And he just eased up on Lafayette. And he recognized the signs of someone having some flashbacks.
Yep.
And having some issues.
Yeah.
Having a breakdown.
I know. That
and
was
poor Lafayette.
So sweet.
Aww. And he just was like, okay, come on.
Come on. Oh, that
was
really
so
cool.
Sweet. I just love Terry.
Yeah. I really like
Terry.
So I don't want to see Marianne hurt him.
I know. See, that's what I'm worried about with all those people that she's got with the, you know, in her
black eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that she's going to hurt him or something.
Yeah. And I hope not.
And then the scene with Pam and Lafayette was really good.
I love Pam.
I was just cracking up when she came in there and he was like, oh. And he starts jumping and running into the rack That was hilarious.
But did you notice she said, this isn't bad. I could sleep here in a pinch. You know, and that was the freezer.
Yeah, because it's tight.
Okay, so that's why I'm thinking of the cold part.
And, well, they're cold-blooded, so that's true. They kind of like the cold, so.
Yeah, I felt kind of sorry for Lafayette. I did that, too. You know, but I like Pam, though.
But we were talking about this last week in the spoiler section. Uh-huh. I think they want him to sell V again to try to figure out who it is he was selling to.
Yes.
Across state lines.
So they know he had a buyer in Dallas.
Right. They want to get to the bigger fish.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They don't, you know, and then they, like she said, you need to remember that you owe us so that they can get him to do what they want him to do. Which I like this better than them turning him into a vampire.
Yeah, I guess so.
I do.
But I'm like Andy, I just want some of his pizzazz back.
Yeah.
I want some of it. I realize he won't be exactly the same, you know, after this 2.5 week ordeal, thinking he's going to die in a minute. But I do want some of the old Lafayette back. Because, like, one thing I liked about this episode was the old sassy Tara was back a little bit.
Well, for like 1 second.
Yeah, but it was a little bit, though.
Excuse me. Okay, well, I think, that was it. Is that all that you wanted to talk about?
It was a good episode.
Some great feedback come back to us this week.
Oh, we did.
We did. The first one I want to talk about was another comment on our iTunes description page.
Great.
Or we got another rating, I should say.
Great.
On our podcast page from Laura Gunn. And she says, great podcast. This is the first podcast I listen to after each episode. The sisters are funny and get to the point. The sound quality is very good. The best part for me is when they talk about Lafayette. Ooh, he's my favorite.
Yep.
Ours too. Or one of the favorites.
Yeah.
Thanks, ladies. This Latina from Texas loves you.
Hey.
Hey, Laura Gunn.
Hi, Laura Gunn. Thank you for the very nice comment. We love Lafayette too. We just love him.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite characters. I've got a couple more now.
Yeah,
me
too.
But last season he was him and Tara, the old... You know, cousin.
Sassy Tara
were my favorites on the show.
But you know who's growing on me? Eric is growing on me, though. Because last season, he was kind of, okay.
Well, we didn't see him enough get attached to him.
I'm really liking Eric,
though. Well, this season, so far, my favorite characters are Jessica, Eric, and I really like Sookie. I don't know. I've always really liked her. But I really like... excuse me. I really like her, too. But if I have to say my favorites, I'd say Jessica.
I would have to say Lafayette and Jessica.
Yeah. Lafayette's still up there, too.
I do like Pam a lot, though. I just don't see her a lot. But
no,
I do like Pam.
We don't see enough of Pam.
Yeah. But I do like Pam, though. Yeah.
So thank you, Laura Gunn,
thank
for the
you
great
so much.
Comment and... giving us 5 stars. We love it.
Yay.
We also had 2 emails.
Cool.
This week. The first one from Nanine, and she doesn't say where she's from.
Okay.
And I'm assuming Nanine is a woman.
Okay.
Well, of course, she's a woman, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
She says, dear sisters, I just wanted to send you both an email saying how much I enjoy your podcast. I downloaded about 5 different True Blood podcasts, and yours, hands down, was the best. I'll be listening, Nanine.
Thank you, Nanine. That is awesome.
That is cool.
Awesome.
So thank you, Nanine. I'm
thank
not sure
you
where
so
you're
much.
From, but shout out to Nanine. Thank you very much.
That's great.
And the fact that you're saying that you've listened to several other True Blood podcasts and you like ours, that's a great compliment.
Yeah,
so we really appreciate it so much.
We do. We appreciate it so much.
Now, next time you email, let us know who your favorite character is and what you think about this season so far.
Yeah, that'd be good to know.
And we also got another email from, Jay. We'll just call him Jay. I don't know if he wants
Mr. to. Mr. Jay.
Yes. He signs this email, Mr. Sister. So, Mr. Sister J, he says, hey, sisters, just wanted to drop you a line to let you know you are my favorite True Blood podcast ever. I was a fan of your Big Brother podcast last year.
Yay.
Yay, Big Brother.
We have Big Brother this year, too, Sister J. So
Mr. J.
And
okay, so he says, I was a fan of your Big Brother podcast last year and was pleasantly surprised by this new one. I'm so happy to have found it. A few thoughts on True Blood Season 2 so far. Daphne. She may turn into a cute little doe, but I don't trust her as far as I can throw her. Ugh. Sam needs to run as far away from her as he can get. Mr. J, how did you know?
I know. That's a good comment.
He has some foreshadowing to this week's episode because little did we know. Well, we kind of knew she was freaky with them scratches.
Yep.
But how did you know that Sam needed to run?
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say, Marianne, I love to hate her, and I agree that they need to give us a few more answers before I get bored. She did manage to have the creepiest moment of the season so far, in my opinion. Grand doppelganger.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. For that episode, we didn't really catch on that. Thank you, Mr. J. That's an excellent comment. It was creepy to have her sitting at that table, dressed up like Gran.
In them country clothes.
Reading a book.
Just like Gran used to do when Sookie would come home.
Oh, man.
That was freaky.
That was creepy.
Very creepy.
Yeah. Good observation.
Subdued. And yes, I was waiting up for you. That was crazy. Okay, his next comment is, Gran, why on earth did they pick the worst picture of her ever to show over and over again? She looks like a scary demon. She looks like a scary demon in that pic. Ew. He's talking about
the birthday picture.
Yeah, the birthday picture. And you know what? When I read that, I just started cracking up because
I did too. I laughed because it's true.
It is true. She does kind of look freaky. And you know, considering that the kids that Sookie and Tara were supposed to be so young, they really could have gotten a younger picture of Gran.
Yeah, they
you know,
should've
asked her to bring something from home. Who knows? If that that was funny.
Okay. What else does Mr. J say?
He goes on to say, Sookie, loving her cute wardrobe in Dallas. I do too.
Mm-hmm. She's just real cute.
Also, loving that she's not quite as hot-headed as she was in season one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they got a lot of flack for that.
I think so.
But I think it was necessary because they needed to kind of still show she was more independent. And
well, as I pointed out on a previous show, though, I'm glad they changed that because I was getting a little bored with that because every episode, she was always doing the same thing. Fussing a bill, making up a bill. Fussing a bill, making up a bill.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's fine and dandy to show her confliction, but it was getting old. So I'm glad they switched it up too, Mr.
I'm really liking her this season.
Me too.
I liked her in last season too. I really like her, but yes, I love her outfits and those dresses that she's wearing. And especially that one that was not the country red checkered thing, but where she's kind of, they had kind of have her with a retro 50s pinup kind of vibe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm really liking that. He also says, Eric, so much better without the cheesy wig. Love how his character is a little more compelling this year.
Yes.
I agree. I love that we're seeing more of Eric, and I hope we continue to see more of him.
I do too. He's very good.
Jessica, I really wanted to hate her, but I can't. She had me for sure when she made her comment about eating disorders. She and Hoyt are so my favorites. I also think Jessica could fill in some of the Bubba stories. Oh, I skipped something. Hold on. I skipped one. Let me go back.
I was going to say.
I skipped one. Lafayette, because this will make sense with the
right.
Jessica thing. I strongly suspect that he will take on the roles that Bubba took in the books. I know Sister J hates book talk, but Sister K will know what I mean. He's in the perfect position to be Eric's lackey, like Bubba sort of was. And some of Bubba's moments are really pivotal for the stories to move along. Now, in the books, this is a really interesting part
of the books. Explain that to me.
Yeah, this is a really cool part of the books.
This is the one time that we can discuss the book.
No, we're going to keep discussing the books, Sister J. I'm going to bring the books up, believe it. If I remember the doggone storyline, that's my problem. And this is the... Oh, before I go on, I just have to vent. I had all 8 copies of the books because as soon as I started watching True Blood last season, I went and bought all the books and read them. Mm-hmm. All within a month.
Mm-hmm.
And So as people were getting more and more into True Blood, I loaned them out to someone at work. I have yet to see them damn books today.
Where are they at?
That fool still has them.
Oh, well, you need to ask for them back.
I have asked and asked. I've asked probably 5 times.
Oh, well, you need to get.
And now I'm at the point where I'm not going to ask anymore. Every time this person passed me, I'm going to give them the evil eye. I ain't going to bring it up. And if it's really that crucial that they keep my books, keep the damn books. But I ain't going to forget.
What did they say when you asked?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. I'll bring those tomorrow. I ain't seen shit from them books.
Oh, I tell you how you do that. You take you one of those big sticky notes and you write, bring Sister K's books to work, and you give it to them, say, stick this in your car.
No, I'm not going to bring it up anymore. I'm telling you, I mentioned it because I wanted to let someone else borrow the books.
Exactly.
And now, you know, and they knew that this person was wanting the books.
Maybe that's why they still got them.
I figure they've done something to them.
Yep.
Maybe they spilled some shit on. I don't know if I want the books back. Because I don't know how nasty people are.
You didn't know this about the person before you.
No, you don't know people at work.
I do.
You don't know people.
Anyway,
so
back to explain the book thing.
So in the books, Eric has like Pam and Chow and Long Shadow, and he has other vampires that work for him and that do things for him as the sheriff. Well, Bubba is a vampire underling for Eric. But the cool thing about Bubba in the books is they never say it outright in the books who he is, but they always describe him as, when Sookie first meets him in the books, she's just staring at him with her mouth open going, that's, and they're like, yes, don't mention his name. He goes by Bubba now. And they keep saying he's the king of Memphis.
Oh, so they're trying to say he's Elvis.
He's Elvis. And the cool part about it is that the backstory is that when he died, when Elvis died, the coroner, well, the morgue that he went to, one of the coroners there that was going to deal with his body was a vampire. And they were such a fan of him, they were like, no, we cannot let this go. And he had been dead for long enough that when they went to turn him, he didn't turn all the way right. Mm. So his mind is kind of half gone. So he's kind of like mentally challenged also. Mm-hmm. So he's the king, but he's the mentally challenged king.
Lord have mercy. But,
I don't know, the character I really like in the books. But he's still him. He still looks like him. He still sings.
So is he like the comic relief?
No, I mean, the books are really funny.
Okay.
And there's some funny scenes with Bubba, but in the books, nobody mentions his name. Whenever they introduce him to someone, people are always like, he gets really upset if you call him by his human name. Mm-hmm. And he is an underling of Eric's, and he's sent to kind of protect Sookie and you know, as things happen in the books, as we know happen in True Blood.
So can he protect her?
Yeah.
Oh, so
he's still a vampire.
Oh, so he can do stuff. Okay.
He's still active. He's just not as swift as everybody else.
Okay.
He's slightly mentally challenged.
Well, let's hope they don't do that to Lafayette.
No, but what Mr. J is saying is he thinks Lafayette is going to kind of take a role of Bubba in the book.
Gotcha.
Where he's kind of like a pivotal point of some of the storylines, and he's going to kind of be a little underling of Eric's.
Right. Okay.
You know, I think that's what he's trying to say.
Okay.
Not that he's going to be a vampire, not that he's going to be challenged
right,
and all that.
Right. Okay.
Sorry, y'all. Hopefully that's not a spoiler. I mean, that's really not a spoiler, but for those who haven't read the books, it's not such a big storyline that it's going to ruin the books for you or the show for you. I really, one more thing about that subject is that I don't think that storyline will ever, ever come to fruition on True Blood, the TV series, because there's no way that Elvis's estate would ever allow them to do like the books did and allow like a Elvis impersonator or someone who looks like him to be on True Blood and kind of portray him as a mentally challenged person. So okay. I don't think that storyline will ever come
Let's
to the show.
Not.
So it's not really a spoiler to the show. Okay, moving on with the email. Mr. J says, Jessica, I really want to hate her, but I can't. She had me for sure when she made her comment about eating disorders. She and Hoyt are so my favorites. I also think Jessica could fill in some of the Bubba stories. So that's why that makes sense.
Okay.
He goes on to say, Bill Yawn. Who?
Well, you know, Bill, up until this episode that we just discussed, I mean, he was just accompanying Sookie. But now with Lorena there and we get more of his backstory and stuff, I'm liking it.
I kind of like Bill this season, too. He's more of a vampire.
He's more of a vampire.
And we see more of his ruthlessness, mm-hmm. and that's building a really cool story.
I think so.
And then he says, Jason, dumb, dumb, dumb. He needs to get as far away from Sarah as possible. By the way, Steve is creepy, and Luke is a total tool.
Yeah, I think Steve Newland, I agree with you, Mr. J. Steve Newland, though, to me, is kind of creepy. Because he just says too much off-the-wall stuff, other than, you know, when Sookie's listening to his thoughts, though. He's just something creepy about him.
He is creepy.
Yeah, something creepy about him, though.
He says, Arlene and Terry, adorable, too. Love them together. I kind of like them, too.
Yeah, I do, too.
I do.
I like Terry.
And I think Arlene will just go to whoever shows interest.
Oh, she will. After Renee, yeah.
But Terry needs somebody to kind of smother him and love on him. So.
Well, and Terry, if you recall last season, he said at least more than once that he really likes Arlene's hair.
Yep.
So, yeah, cute.
He has a little bit more. He says, Tara, what the hell? I understand that she's all damaged or whatever, but that doesn't mean she has to be stupid. I liked it way better when she was a bitch.
Yep.
How is she going to let that nasty eggs lay up in her bed like that all damn day?
I love you, Mr. J, because I can't stand that eggs.
Wait. The best part is next. How is she going to let that nasty eggs lay up in her bed like that all damn day? He needs to get a job. I was saying the same. I don't think I said it on the podcast, but I was thinking the same thing.
I know. How come you don't work, Tara? I work.
That day, that episode where she came home from work when everybody was beating up on her and crazy Marianne Doppelganger was sitting in the kitchen, and she goes upstairs, and eggs laying in the bed.
Reading a book.
I'm like, that fool should have been at a job.
What? He should have been working.
Thank you. Okay, he goes on to say about Tara. He makes it a point to say how much he's changed, into a freeloader. He and Marianne and Carl take care of each other, blah. If he wants to take care of someone, it needs to be himself. He needs to stop living off everyone around him. I know the sex can't be good enough for Tara to be that dumb. Mm-hmm. How did she not snap into red alert when Marianne was all dressed like Grand? Tara, get it together, girl. I agree with that. 100%.
100%.
Then he goes on to say, giant pig. Has to be Carl, right? I don't know. Of course, he sent this before this episode, so now we know it was Daphne. And then he says, anyway, keep up all the awesome work, and I really hope your bronchitis is a whole lot better. Thank you, Mr. J.
Yeah.
As you can tell, it is, but I'm still having a cough.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. J. We love long emails where our fans give us their opinions of things. So keep them coming. Just feel free anytime. Yep. Let us know what you think.
That was great.
That was great.
If anyone else, or if y'all, Mr. J and Nanine and Laura Gunn want to send us more emails about their thoughts about the season or an episode or us,
mm-hmm.
please do so at our email address, sistaspeak@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail if you like, 972-692-7341. And you can also go to our website, sistasinreview.com, and click on the True Blood link.
Right.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, this has been kind of a long episode, but we had a lot to get to, and
I definitely wanted
to give a shout out to our great listeners. Thank y'all so much.
Thank y'all very much.
That's it for this week. I'm Sister J. Oh, wait. I'm Sister K.
Why do we do that every so often.
We did that in our Sisters Interview podcast last year.
Okay. Let's start the ending again. Start it again.
I am Sister K.
And I'm Sister J.
See you next week.
Yeah.